This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It won't be long that motorists, truck, and vehicular traffic will be able to make it onto the Klein Avenue Bridge in East Chicago. The final segments are in place. The touch-up work is now being done to complete the bridge to have it up and open soon. To tell us more about the process, how it's coming along, and all the process along the way, we have Terry Velligan. He is the General Manager of Operations for the Klein Avenue Bridge LLC, the organization that is actually building the bridge. Terry, thanks for joining us again on Regionally Speaking. It's been a while since we last talked, but if you will, bring us up to date. Maybe we should start out, I guess, first, though, with a little primer as to what the bridge is all about and what it's constructed. It's one of the most unique constructed bridges, I guess, that's around the country these days.
Yes, thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. And yes, we're moving along with the bridge, as you noted, and we are scheduled to be open this winter. So we are moving along, and we're right on schedule. The bridge itself, is for your listeners, is connecting the SR 912, which is Klein Avenue, and the bridge has been down for 10 years or so, mm-hmm. and we are rebuilding it. And it's a vital infrastructure project that will help alleviate a lot of the congestion in Northwest Indiana. Specifically, as anybody drove on 8094, we anticipate that many of that vehicle traffic will divert going up to Chicago. And anybody who takes the bridge will find out that it's a faster route to Chicago. So we are excited about that opportunity to help with some of the congestion in Lake County.
That's been a big problem, we know, over the last decade now, since the old bridge had to be torn down because of structural deficiencies, and you had to basically create the new bridge, to be sure. What is it about the new bridge that is so different from anything that's been built or put up before? Certainly there along that stretch over the canal in East Chicago, but maybe probably any place else in Northwest Indiana.
Yes, it's a unique structure in itself. It's a balanced cantilever bridge. But they've been around for quite a number of years. But we've taken considerable interest in maintaining and owning the bridge as Klein Avenue Bridge. So we put in some protocols and processes to ensure that this bridge is done. Number one priority for us is commuter safety. Mm-hmm. And also we incorporated some aesthetics that will give pride to Northwest Indiana and East Chicago. It's going to be a beautiful bridge. Anybody that passes by it now will see the unique structure of the bridge and how it's being constructed.
When you came up with the idea, you and your designers with FIG Bridge Partners, and what things were you looking at in particular that you wanted to make unique with this bridge design that maybe some of the others the company's made might have some features that have worked in the past, but you want to make it special this time?
Well, one of the things that we focused on is, first and foremost, is actually the impact it'll have on Lake County. Mm-hmm. In terms of traffic. I mean, that was our very first focus. The bridge itself, in terms of aesthetics and how it's constructed, was a close second, but it's unique in the fact that it's a box girder, so each segment of the bridge was actually in a controlled environment when we're making the boxes or segments, as we call them.
Right.
So we actually constructed a casting building, and we casted all the segments in that casted building to create a controlled environment. So that's really what we wanted to do, is make sure we control every aspect of it, and as well as remain on target to complete the bridge.
Right. Now, when you set up the casting building, it gave you the opportunity to create these segments one at a time and take them out for storage at the time. How long did they have to stand out outdoors in storage before the crews could actually put them in place up there on the bridge itself?
One of the things that we did is we needed to make enough of the segments that we wouldn't get ahead of ourselves when they started actually putting up the segments.
Right.
So we casted a number of segments well ahead of time, and once they reached a certain PSI, strength, as you call it,
right,
then we were able to set them outside. And obviously, you know, in this area, the conditions change quite rapidly. So one of the things is that the designers and engineers ensured that each segment was made to spec, and then we were able to set it outside.
Now, bring us up to date here in the last few months. Unfortunately, with the coronavirus pandemic causing, I'm sure, some delays in getting some of the work done, what did you and the crews have to do to try to work around that? Or could you continue doing a lot of this work even though the pandemic is underway?
We continued to do a lot of this work while the pandemic was on its way.
Yeah.
One of the things that we focused on is, again, how do we complete this with everything else going on? And I think we achieved that. So we kept working, made some adjustments, but everybody kept working. And we're looking to get this bridge complete and opened up.
That's great. Give us an idea of what this last month has been like here when you finally got to the point early in November that you got to the last segments to put them in place. What was the atmosphere like on the work site in getting these last segments ready to go?
I think that really comes from the workforce in Northwest Indiana. We are a strong workforce here, and they take pride in everything that they do. And I think that was one of the things that the workforce really showed is they have an interest in this bridge. They take pride in their area, whether it be Northwest Indiana or some South Chicago. So it was really exciting for them as well as us to reach a point at we could see the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's and I commend the workforce. They worked very hard to build this bridge. It's a long project. But now they could see that we're coming to the end, and I think, you know, they're excited about it.
Yeah. So. Now, Terry, since this bridge is about to be completed, it's hoped to be opened up to traffic in the early part of winter months coming up. What are you going to be able to do, since it's going to be a toll bridge, would be able to do to make it certainly convenient for people to get them used to traveling on the bridge and to be able to get the big truck traffic that has been clogging up 80-94 and probably to an extent I-65 as well, all trying to connect up with Chicago, to get them to be able to use this bridge now instead of the old route?
One of the things is we have a marketing plan in place. We worked really hard with NDOT to redo a lot of the highway signage to now give notice where Klein Avenue Bridge is. A lot of signs will be going on 80-94. We also have a marketing plan that will incorporate a lot of billboards, newspaper, media such as yourself, to give notice to the commuters and the truck traffic, not only that the bridge is opening. We want to educate, we want to create awareness where the bridge is located, and then the third thing we're doing is offer incentives. So the first month of opening is going to be free, so we entice people to try us out and see how they like the bridge, and really to see how much of a faster route it is into and out of Chicago. So we're kind of like the gateway of Lake County, just on the southern tip of Chicago and the northern tip of Indiana. So we think that a lot of people will see the benefits of taking Klein Avenue Bridge and going in and out of Lake County.
Are you excited about not only having a chance to get this this project finished up here, but getting to see more people take advantage of it?
I think so. I mean, I grew up in this area, and I know what the old Klein Avenue Bridge provided, a lot of positive impacts, not only for the commuters, but also for industry in this area. We see a lot of heavy haul or truck and tractor trailers on 80-94, and I think that a lot of that traffic will take Klein Avenue Bridge, and a lot of people will see the benefits of traveling again. One of the things is it's going to be a new bridge. The rideability is going to be great. The efficiency of having that connection again will be great. And I think Northwest Indiana and the northern part of Indiana will see a huge benefit, not only from a traffic standpoint, but also an economic standpoint. It'll allow more commerce to get in and out of Lake County in an efficient amount of time.
Terry Velligan is the General Manager of Operations for Klein Avenue Bridge, LLC. That's the organization that has been in charge of constructing the bridge that soon will be opened up to traffic here in the early months of winter coming up. Terry, thank you for being with us. Thank you for the updates. And we hope that the people get to enjoy taking the new route instead of having to take the old, much more cluttered route.
Yes. Well, I appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for your interest in I'm sure that people are going to be excited about the opening this winter, and also that they'll be able to try out the new bridge for free for the first 30 days. But that'll be important for people.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. This is Open Enrollment 2021 for residents of Northwest Indiana who are involved with the their health insurance, and CareSource is a nonprofit multi-state health plan that offers health insurance for all 92 Indiana counties, including Lake and Porter and LaPorte and all the others here in the region. And this year, CareSource is offering premiums on health insurance that are very attractive to those who are interested in it. To find out more, let's talk with Steve Smitherman. He's the president of the Indiana market of CareSource. And Steve, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first off, we mentioned a little bit here about what CareSource is all about. Tell us about how CareSource is involved in this fight, I guess, for some, but hopefully not, to find the right kind of health insurance plan.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, we are in the open enrollment period that began on November 1st and runs through December 15th for individuals that are either have a plan or interested in plans on the health on the healthcare exchange.
Mm-hmm.
We offer a product in all 92 counties and varying products across all metal levels. So within the healthcare exchange, there are bronze, silver, and gold level metal levels in which consumers can choose from. The bronze metal levels are more of those individuals who probably are healthier individuals who don't have as many medical expenses and much cheaper premiums, but higher out-of-pocket expense. Silver metal levels are those individuals that are kind of in the medium range where they utilize services, maybe not a ton of them, but pretty consistently. And they're going to find in the silver metal a little higher premium, but much lower out-of-pocket expense. And then the gold is for those individuals who are high utilizers and where you're not going to have your premium is going to be higher, but you're not going to have nearly as much out-of-pocket expense outside your premium. So this year we're really excited because all of our plans across the state of Indiana are significantly less expensive than our competitor. There's only one other plan in the state of Indiana that offers products on the health insurance exchange. And on average, across the 92 counties, our premiums are about $100 cheaper per month. So we're very excited to be able to offer such an affordable offering to Hoosiers across the state of Indiana.
Mm-hmm. I know that the COVID-19 pandemic has caused a lot of problems for people, not only their health now, but also in trying to find the right kind of health plan, health insurance plan, I should say, that will not only be cost-effective for them, but also take care of them. Tell us about some of the things that maybe we should know as we go into this open enrollment period right now.
Well, I think with COVID-19, what we've seen and experienced is individuals probably, you know, not had the elective procedures that they may have had if it wouldn't have been for the pandemic. Individuals that are a little more hesitant to get their wellness exams completed every year. And I think that's one of the things about our plan that's very attractive is all the wellness exams are completely free, no out-of-pocket expense to the members. We put a heavy focus at CareSource on preventative medicine. So those individuals are going in and getting their preventative care services every year. Those are free of charge to them. You know, with COVID and the unknown going into the open enrollment, I mean, really we're encouraging individuals to understand what options are available to them during this open enrollment period, really look at all the plan details as far as what's included, what's not included, because, you know, we also are up against some what are known as short-term or association plans that are out in the market now. And those plans traditionally are much cheaper than a plan on the health insurance exchange. But unfortunately, those plans don't cover nearly the same services that the health insurance exchange plans do. They are not under the same regulations, so they may not cover you know, medications or hospitalizations or behavioral health or pregnancy or those types of things. So it's really important that when consumers are shopping, that they're making sure that they're finding a plan that meets all of their needs.
I know there is concern, not only because of the coronavirus pandemic, but also about action on Capitol Hill and in Washington that may affect those people who are on the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, through their health insurance plans. And what should they know about the coverage that they could get if they stay involved with organizations like CareSource?
Well, I think we don't expect a final ruling from the Supreme Court on the ACA until June, but very encouraging signs out of the latest hearings, some of the Supreme Court's comments and questions that came out of that session led us to believe that they're less likely to overturn the ACA. But even if they did, there will be a ramp-off period. So, you know, if the Supreme Court were to rule in June that the ACA is unconstitutional, the ACA wouldn't stop in June. I mean, they would at least, there'd have to be a period for individuals to look at other options, what other options were available to them, whatever that may be. But we really expect and fully expect that the marketplace coverage will last at a minimum through the end of this year and probably even much longer than that. So, you know, if individuals are hesitant to enroll because of this Supreme Court case, you know, we would really encourage them to go ahead and enroll, get the coverage that they need. And then, you know, as we do always with our members, we will communicate with them frequently should there be any potential changes down the road.
Well, it sounds very confusing, I know, Steve, but hopefully it'll get sorted out soon. And at least we know one way or the other as we go into 2021 about the health insurance plans that will be available. And for folks that, that should get their changes made through the open marketplace, this is the time to do it.
That's right. They have until December 15th to select a plan. If they're already on a CareSource plan, they should have received a letter for it from us already. And if they want to stay with our plan, there's nothing they need to do. They'll just automatically roll over. For those individuals that currently don't have a CareSource plan or shopping, we'd encourage them to look into our plans because it's really comprehensive coverage for, at least in the marketplace space, as affordable as you're going to find.
Steve Smitherman is the president of the Indiana market of CareSource, which is a nonprofit multi-state health plan that offers health insurance for all 92 Indiana counties. Steve, thanks for being with us today to explain things, and we hope that it's cleared up here at the first of the year. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte, and with us this afternoon, we have Ruth Needleman, a Northwest Indiana political activist, to bring us up to date on some of the issues around the region and some other topics as well. Ruth, thank you for joining us on the program today.
And we do have some issues, don't we?
Oh, we do. Certainly do.
Let me start with the decision on the Rashad Cunningham case.
Okay.
Rashad Cunningham, father of five, was sitting in his car, parked in front of his own house when he was killed by a police officer, Isaiah Price III. That happened in August of 2019. The decision from Prosecutor Carter came this past week. That's well over a year. And what's interesting is he talks about having done thorough and extensive review of the evidence, but the only evidence in this case is the statement from the police officers. Because there were no other witnesses, there were some neighbors who might have been looking out the window, but who did not give statements to anybody. And according to the family who was witnessed, it was like 15 seconds between the time the policeman left his car and started shooting. And the other person who was in the car with him is also filing a lawsuit because he was pulled out of the car and beaten up and taken into custody, again, for no reason. What's troubling, well, there's a lot of troubling things about this case. First of all, the family heard nothing for almost a year and 3 months. That's ridiculous. Secondly, there were no eyewitnesses, though they claimed to have talked to eyewitnesses. And also, this police officer who killed him, who said he was aggressive, which is hard to tell when you are looking at someone sitting in a car from a distance, but this officer has a history of violent attacks and lying about them. So, for example, the family says it was 10 seconds between exiting the car and shooting. And they also allege that Cunningham had a licensed arm in his lap, but was holding his wallet and driver's license when he was shot. This officer has questionable run-ins, it says. Price was suspended for 30 days without pay for punching a child in the stomach and lying about it. Now, I don't know, but his word doesn't mean much. But unfortunately, in the state of Indiana, you have the burden of proof. The state has the burden of proof to show that there wasn't reasonable cause, which it never finds. I don't think that Bernard Carter has found against any police officer in the recent history. And Black Lives Matter did put out a statement, and they said, just in brief, I won't read the whole statement, The people of Gary deserve a fair, impartial, and expedient investigation. When the lives of loved ones are lost or endangered, they didn't get this. The important thing is that Black Lives Matter has had a proposal in the works now for 3 or 4 years for a civilian review board to oversee the police. Right now, the investigation was done by the sheriff's office. So talk about the fox, you know, I don't know what the right metaphor here is, but you can't expect the police to investigate the police and find that they used excessive force. But this review board has not been taken seriously, and they recommend, and I have read it, and I recommend that we support this proposal because the commission that Mayor Prince set up is just talking. It's meeting. It's not necessarily representative of the community, and we don't need another discussion to tell us that we have a problem. Note, and this is very critical, Gary is one of the only police forces in the country that has no cameras, no camcorder on body, and no camcorder in the police car. So there was no evidence. Yet it took him, 14 months to find out that there was no evidence? So that's very troubling. And there's a new coalition in town called United Against Racism Coalition. This coalition has led a series of caravans and protests around police violence because of all the killings that have gone on in this country. I recommend to people they watch the ABC special on Breonna Taylor. But we need to do something, and it can't be another talking commission. We need a review board that is led by civilians and can oversee what the police are doing. So that's been very disturbing. I don't know what to say, except if you want to get involved, United Against Racism is a broad coalition that includes Black Lives Matter, but it also includes Progressive Democrats. It includes the National Organization of Women, Indivisible, the NWI Resist, and it involves all these environmental groups. So it's a good effort that we need to pay attention to. And on, not a related issue, but environmental issue and environmental racism in Gary. This just came to my attention from a reporter in Indianapolis. We have an out-of-commission landfill in Gary at 1900 Burr Street. The EPA says it is leaking major pollutants and is suing the city of Gary over poor management. I have heard nothing about this. I have seen nothing about this. But the reporter says he plans to come up next week and investigate that if you live in that area and you have experienced any health problems whatsoever, you need to report them. And you could contact the Indiana Star in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And the reporter's name is Johnny Magdaleno at the Indy Star. And he has worked on this and other really good reports. And I don't know what's happening with this lawsuit, but I imagine when they say major pollutants, they mean serious trouble. My other story that I wanted to mention is the old Welcoming City Ordinance. Back in, was it 2017, I believe?
Yeah.
I worked with a lawyer and a whole group of people pushing for an ordinance in the city of Gary that would stop certain kinds of information being handed over to ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Organization, without any kind of court order. In other words, the ICE was calling up jails and saying, you have a Latino there, hold him until we can investigate his status. That's illegal. That violates their constitutional rights. And that was the kind of thing that the Welcoming City Ordinance was getting at, that you at least need a court order to hold somebody when they've done nothing wrong. But the lawyer who took the suit against the city, and he's really something else. His name is Jim Bopp. He also, just to give you a sense of who he is, he brought legal challenges against President-elect Joe Biden's win in all four battleground states this month. This guy is a leech. Anyhow, he sued, and the Superior Court in Lake County this week said that it was a violation of state law to require any kind of court order or any kind of limitation on cooperation with ICE. What is interesting about the suit is his argument was, and he based it on four plaintiffs, four Gary residents who are never named, who was what was used, what they call standing, In order to bring a suit, you have to have a reason for bringing a suit, and he did not. So in this case, he names four people as complainants who might have been injured by an immigrant if left out of jail. But it turns out, this is what the lawyer says. We have known hard criminals being released in the community to prey on people like our plaintiffs. This was the public safety reason behind why the Indiana General Assembly prohibited these sorts of ordinances. None of the plaintiffs have ever been directly affected or threatened by undocumented residents. The lawyer's response was, not yet. Well, excuse me, how can you have standing claiming that there might be an immigrant who might be overlooked, who might commit a crime, and he might commit it against one of four people? This is ridiculous. Anyhow, it's unclear whether this will be challenged. The good side of it is, for the last 3 years at least, there's been some limitation to basically letting ICE run the city's police department. And I myself have had some run-ins on this score at the airport, where every week they continue to harass me by telling me that I can't park in the airport, I can't stand anywhere on the south side of Airport Road, I can't take photographs of the deportations that are still going on there. And every week there's a Gary policeman there that we're paying. This is obviously a high-crime area. We have a 75-year-old woman with a camera, and they have a dedicated policeman there every week. So I'm sure that we will attempt to challenge this Superior Court decision because it's groundless. And it's groundless because there was no one who has been injured ever, because there is no record in the city of Gary of someone being attacked by an immigrant. without documents. Anyhow, these are tough times, and these issues are very important. And so you can always get in touch with me. I am on Facebook, and it's a public page. You can see my pictures of the deportations on a weekly basis. And you can also find out about United Against Racism, an effort to bring together all progressive groups in this area to really challenge the increased racist activities that have been so promoted by the former president.
Did anyone from this organization have anything to say about the decision by the prosecutor not to file the charges against the police officer? We know that the Black Lives Matter people have. You mentioned that. Even Mayor Prince had a statement that was released. He couldn't say much because of the matter that was still in litigation,
right.
but he had something to say as well, I understand.
Well, we are planning, actually, not in response just to this, but we have had the family of Rashad Cunningham speak at all of our events, and we're planning a short educational that will be held in February, Black History Month, on the need for police reform, and mainly we are promoting the recommendation from Black Lives Matter for a civilian review board. But obviously, we also need cameras on cops and in police cars. And we also need to have a better hurdle. I mean, there is no way the police will be found accountable for these murders because the only evidence that's needed is the police to say that it was reasonable force. So we're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
We are definitely working on it, but we didn't put out a statement yet.
Anything else coming up here that you're aware of that you should pass along to us? Any meetings or events coming up?
Well, United Against Racism meets regularly through Zoom, although we're not meeting this week because of Thanksgiving.
Right.
People can contact me through Facebook Messenger or through Facebook, and I can let people know how to get on the calls and become part of the coalition. And we're really hoping that we can combine this educational with a major campaign to get a civilian review board.
I know that there was supposed to be a report coming out. At least the mayor had said so in his statement that there was supposed to be a report coming out soon from the board that he created earlier this year.
Right. It's I spoke to Black Lives Matter, who has a representative on that commission, although she was not notified of the first three meetings. And it's probably going to not do much because we've had many studies that come up with nothing, whereas Black Lives Matter recommendation, which is based on national models, is really what's needed because without a civilian review, we have the police investigating the police and I still can't figure out what this cop is doing monitoring me at the airport. I mean, one person.
Well, Ruth, hopefully you'll get an answer at least to that, to be sure. And we thank you for spending time with us to talk about
Absolutely.
The issues today. Thank you very much. That's
sure.
Northwest Indiana political activist Ruth Needleman, and you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us. I hope you'll be with us tomorrow. We're going to revisit our conversation we had recently with IU Northwest economics professor Micah Pollack about a recent study that was done for Indiana University. Hope you'll join us.